Good afternoon.
Hello. I'm in the car, almost home, so I'm going to have to mute till I get there.
I understand. Well, you're the first to arrive. So.
Okay. All right.
Did you want to continue with another class on the four phases or move on to the next subject?
I'm sorry. What did you say? I had to unmute.
I understand.
Which
I was asking
you,
I was asking if you wanted to.
You said at 1 o'clock West Coast time, which would be 3.
Right. No, at 3 your time. Yes.
Yes. Okay. I'm gonna try. I'm not sure because I've been gone all morning. It was, you know, blood work and that kind of thing. So I'm gonna try. I have a physical tomorrow, so I'm probably missing some too.
I understand.
It's not him, it's me. We take turns, you know. Okay,
yes.
Before
you mute.
Okay.
It's
I'm
a separate
mute,
question.
Yes.
Last week in the four phases, I said it would depend on what people wanted to do, whether to have a second four phases class or to move on to a new subject.
It doesn't
matter
to me, but I did order the book, but I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but I did order it since you told me the name. So it's up to you and what the others say.
All right. We'll wait. We're waiting for the others anyway, so.
Okay. All right. The ladies' meeting went well yesterday. So
I'm sure it did.
A bit later.
Understood.
Okay.
Has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Shalom. Hanok Shusha. How's your day?
Is this Lizette?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay. I'm glad you joined us.
Thank you. So am I. I have to run about 1:30, but I wanted to at least get in what I can get.
Understood. Well, we're starting with a new book today, so.
Oh, okay. What book is it?
I'll explain it just momentarily, but we're going to start with L'Shem Yichud.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you.
L'shem Yichud Kudsha Barichu Ishkinte Bidkilu Urshimu Utkilu Utkilu Urshimu Liakta L'shem Yudhe Bavadhe Yehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah Vayhino Amadunai Elohinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kunadei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kunadei. So this class is starting with a new book, which is titled The Evolution of God. And it's written by a modern rabbi, Rabbi Ariel Bar Tzedak, from his website is koshertorah.com. I've been studying with him for over 20 years. He has gone through an evolution of his thinking. And this book is kind of a recap of all of the different levels of Kabbalah. It's quite extensive and quite detailed, and it's well worth listening to. So we are beginning with the introduction. I should say you can purchase the book both in as a Kindle or a regular book. The Kindle is like $10 and the regular book's like $25. If you want to follow on specifically with the book, I do recommend reading the book. And we're going to do it slowly. So the introduction to the evolution to God. Secret codes. And let me also explain I don't really have time to post this as a handout. Plus, it's a copyrighted volume. But I do have permission to teach from the book. So, secret codes, so sublime, so mystical. Who can understand them? Who can grasp their meaning? A code is a form of concealment. Code is used to substitute
has joined.
One thing for another. Welcome, Malka. We are starting the class with the new book called Evolution of God. It's written by Rabbi Bar Sadok from the Kosher Torah. You can purchase the book because we will not have a handout. You can purchase it on Amazon. And we're just starting with the introduction, and I've read the first paragraph. We're now starting the second paragraph with a very interesting statement. A code is a form of concealment. The code is used to substitute one thing for another. One who knows the means of substitution will understand the code. One without this knowledge can only view the form of the code without ever understanding what it is truly saying. The word form is important to understand. We need to define it. We're not going to define it, but I'm going to discuss what is a form. Your soul has no form. Hashem has no form. Your soul is part or an aspect of Hashem. Literally, the metaphorical description is the granite mountain that has a rock a mile away, also made from granite. There was an iceberg that sliced off the rock. What is the difference between the mountain and the rock? Only capacity, only size. They are the same essence, but they're not the same. Form is a covering of the essence. Form is a garment. You'd put on your jacket to go outside in the cold. You take off your jacket to go outside in the heat. Do you wear your jacket in the house? Then the house is a form, is a garment for what is in the house. What is the essence of what is in your house? There are people and there are things. All of the things are tools to be used by the people. Is the tools a garment? Or the tool is a form for what's inside the essence of the tool. The television set is a tool, or is it a garment? It's a garment for the ability to perceive the electromagnetic energy that's displayed on the screen. It's a tool for that. It's also a garment for that. Can I see the electromagnetic image that's displayed on the screen without the television, without the tool, without the garment, without the form? The answer is normally no. But what is telepathy? It's receiving an image in my brain, in my mind. We have those two words, mind and brain. One is a physical thing. It's something I could hold in my hand if I opened up your skull. A brain is physical. The mind is spiritual. The brain is a garment for the mind. There, you may have questions, and feel free to ask them as we go along. But you can see, I'm not giving you direct answers. I'm asking questions and leading you in a direction of your own personal understanding. The purpose of a code is to keep outsiders outside and to only allow inside those who have been granted access. And herein lies the great danger. Without going into the danger, let's understand this idea of granting access and the purpose of a code, meaning to keep outsiders outside. A code is a fence. We're taught to build a fence around the Torah, but that fence can keep things out, or it can keep what is inside in. The reason that there was the first sin was because of a fence that Adam created. Because God told Adam, do not eat from the fruit of the tree of knowledge, good and evil. But Eve wasn't present at that moment. She didn't hear it. So Adam instructed her. And his instruction was, do not touch the tree of knowledge, good and evil. There was a difference between what God told Adam and what Adam told Eve. There was a fence being created. The fence, is it a mistake? Did Adam have the consciousness that he was building a fence to protect Eve? Or did he have the consciousness that he wanted to be better or higher than Eve? We don't know Adam's consciousness, but he built a fence. A fence is a code. Human nature is intensely inquisitive. Codes, therefore, attract much attention and are considered a great challenge, a prize to be won, a battle to be fought. The mere knowledge of the existence of a code invites multiple attempts to break it. Many try to break the code, and they all fail miserably. Many others try, they fail miserably, but at the same time claim to have broken the code. Many outsiders who do not recognize the true inner meanings concealed within the code, unfortunately, accept these false claims. Many are those who are desirous for the code to be broken and still are totally oblivious to what the code means. Therefore, those willing to be duped will believe anything that they are told. Many go on believing that they have broken the code, know well its secret meanings, and are happy with their false accomplishments. All this time, the masters of the code consent to this deception, for they know that the veil of self-induced deception provides yet another layer of protection, covering the real secrets that are hidden within. There is no greater hiding place for a thing than out in the open. In the very place that one ignores, and so despises. This is the way of secrets. Mastering secrets requires one to master the arts of deception. When we read the Zohar frequently, we are told, this is a big secret. This is a secret. But what is a secret? It's a code. What is a secret? It's a fence. What is a secret? An attractive tool. I should say an attracting tool. I should say a garment. Only one who knows how to conceal a thing can protect a thing. Only a concealed thing can grow unhindered to full strength and accomplish its purpose, unhindered by opposition and the occasional interference by the bothersome curious. What is a womb? It's a tool to conceal. It's a tool to allow a baby to grow to full term. What is childhood? It's a garment to protect the child from things that it is not ready to deal with. Let us shift now from general to specific. For some, what follows might as well begin with the words, once upon a time. Not everyone is willing to accept what I am about to discuss as a matter of fact and history. Those of this persuasion will dismiss outright everything which I am about to address. This is what it is. I do not have a need or a desire to confront or challenge. There is one reality that nature always proves true. In the end, what is true becomes self-evident. If what I am about to address is true, then it does not matter whether or not it is believed or accepted by anyone. Time will tell. And future history will bear out past events. No matter how deep they lie buried in the ancient past. What does this paragraph mean? There will be a resurrection of the dead. That means that personage known as Moses will be available to me to ask, why did you do this? That personage known as Abraham will be available to me to ask, did you really fight the four kings? Did you only take Eliezer with you? Everything is known. It may not be known to me. Over 3,000 years ago, according to our beliefs, a nation of individuals representing all humanity was chosen by a higher power to experience a most peculiar encounter with an extraterrestrial force. The purpose of this encounter was to provide humanity with direction to enable us collectively to evolve to our highest innate potential. Why is the Torah, which is what he just described in different words, why is the Torah the tool to allow you and me to meet our highest potential. Rabbi Ashlag taught this in his Introduction to the Ten Luminous Emanations. Buddha is a wise man. I said is because he's not gone. He's righteous. And the tzaddikim do not die. They just change frames of reference. Buddha is a wise man. But he is a man. If I follow the teachings of Buddha, I can be very righteous, just like Buddha. But I cannot reach the highest potential because Buddha is a man. He's not Hashem. But if I follow the teachings of the Torah, which is the soul of Hashem, the essence of Hashem, if I follow the teachings of the Torah, I can reach higher than what Buddha reached. I can reach higher than what Moses reached, except we are taught that no one can reach higher than Moses. The answer, or the reason why that statement is true and false, is Moses is an accumulation of the mature consciousness of every human being. So if I were to become higher than Moses, I would also have to have that same level of being connected to the mature consciousness of every human being. Yes, that can happen. No, it's not likely to happen. This extraterrestrial force entrusted us with a book of sorts. Yet this book is no ordinary book of words, sentences, stories, and meanings. This book can be more properly compared to a computer code, a multiple-layered program that contains so many elements that even a vocabulary to describe them all has not yet been developed by even the most pioneering scientists or even the most pioneering Kabbalists. That's my opinion. This extraterrestrial force we know to be Hashem, creator of the universe. Right there is an incomplete statement, because Hashem is not the creator of the universe. Hashem is an extension of the creator of the universe. We call that extension light. And the name Hashem includes all aspects of light. I'm continuing to read. We call this extraterrestrial communique Torah. It means teaching or instruction. Other people say it's law. The law of nature, the law of the universe, the law of miracles. It has become many things to many peoples, yet the internal code used to unlock its true secrets and meanings. They still remain in the hands of a select few, as it has for centuries. Since its initial reception, 3,400 years ago. For millennia now, Torah beliefs have been given a special title and realm of knowledge. This was the creation of religion. This is a creation of man. Yet Torah was not meant to be relegated to this new domain. Torah is broader than religion. That's my comment. Torah is not a matter of religion. In actuality, Torah is what today we call science. Due to the fact that most faces of Torah shown today in the public arena endeavor to interpret Torah, they endeavor to interpret a Torah metaphor in a literal fashion. Many rational minds and scientists dismiss Torah as having any actual scientific merit or basis in truth. Now let me go back to the statement. Torah is not a matter of religion. Torah is what today we call science. Now most religionists would say that science is a subset of Torah. Rabbi Bar Sadak is saying it's the other way around. And we really need to contemplate that. Which is it? Or can it be both? Science is a subset of Torah because it's not complete. Torah is complete. Religion is a creation of man. Therefore, it's not Torah completely. And that is difficult for people to understand. That is what is taught in the Kabbalah at its essence. Continuing. As we see, the secrets of the Torah remain concealed. Within it, in full view, open for all to see, yet at the same time disregarded and dismissed. The secrets therein therefore stay as safe today as they have been for 3,400 years. Millennia. 3,400 years. 3.4 millennia. The secrets, the code, is still there, hidden in plain sight, concealed in plain view. So why can't I understand it? As we see, the secrets of the Torah remain concealed within it, in full view, open for all to see, yet at the same time, disregarded and dismissed. The secrets therein, therefore, stay as safe today as they have been for millennia. Now let us address the reason why the Torah must contain secrets, and why for centuries it has been deemed dangerous to have those secrets made known to unprepared parties. There is an inherent difference in the maturity level between children and adults. Adults not only have the benefit of experience and greater education than do children, they are also more biologically advanced. The adult human brain can comprehend information and analyze it, digest it, and integrate it in ways that children have yet to learn. Unfortunately, children within the context of their limited abilities of comprehension are willing to accept that adults know more than they do. Children therefore place themselves, however innocently, in danger's way. If not for adult supervision and rules, many children would unfortunately succumb to the consequences of their limited scope of vision. When children endanger themselves, adults do not blame the children. They simply protect them from hurting themselves. Adults recognize the limitations of the child and act accordingly. It is a well-known and evident fact of life that just because one matures chronologically in years, one may not equally mature psychologically. Many are those who are adults in body and yet remain children in mind. While this may have some benefits, true, still one who does not mature and embrace adult responsibilities never achieves the fullness of what it means to be an adult. One who is not an adult cannot be trusted with adult things. Therefore, growing up must be more than chronological. The job of the mature adult is to educate and direct children to reach maturity. This applies to both chronological children and to psychological children. Mature adults have the responsibility to educate immature adults and to teach them how to be mature, responsible, and disciplined. This is true of an individual level, and this is true at the collective scale of humanity as a whole. Many are those who are mature adults. Many are those who are immature adults. Immature adults cannot handle the responsibilities of their mature counterparts. If given a mature task, the immature adult, like a child, is unable to handle it. This results in it results into damage that is done to oneself, and unfortunately, often to others. Indeed, the damage caused by immature adults, one towards another, is often severe. We merely need to look at the history of human events to see the carnage and savagery of immature adults, acting with the out-of-control nature of children. An adult, due to his physical size and social role in society, is able to direct and discipline a child, directing him in the ways of maturity and responsibility, and becoming a responsible adult. This natural advantage, however, is lost when the mature adult endeavors to educate the immature adult. The results of this interaction are often disastrous, with the immature adult, instead of receiving direction, acts out with rejection and resentment, often with flares of violence. The mature adult, therefore, has to act with care, subtly, and craft in order to educate his immature peers, and at the same time not arouse their childlike ire. What this is saying, as a mature adult, you have the responsibility to teach and direct the immature adult. But that has to be done carefully, with a goal in mind, with the concept of consequences to the immature adult, how to avoid their rejection, how to motivate them to learn and accept the direction that they need to follow to become mature. The ways and means of directing immature adults into maturity must therefore be carefully guarded and concealed so as not to arouse resentment or anger or worse, jealousy and violence. This natural state has been the truth of human reality as far back as records can document. Into this situation comes the force, comes Hashem. From beyond, wherever that may be, it has intervened in order to provide instruction and direction to enable maturing individuals to continue along the path to psychological adulthood. It provided a framework and a system that can be passed down generation after generation to educate, to direct, to enlighten, and to inspire. It gave us the Torah. The only condition for receiving it was that the Torah's directions must be followed. We all know that when we acquire something new, especially something that needs to be built, it comes with a set of instructions. How many of us have learned, often through hard experience, that following the enclosed instructions is the key to successful assembly, unless the instructions were written in Japan or China, in English, that's a second language. So it is with humanity itself. We too have our instruction manuals. This is Torah. When we follow it, everything seems to work out well. It is when we decide not to follow the proper directions that matters get out of hand and things break down instead of building up. There you have it, the meaning and reason why Torah was given to the nation, chosen to represent humanity. The instructions were to follow the Torah and thereby serve as a light to the rest of humanity, leading them into proper psychological maturity. By doing so, we as a race would then be able to commune with those who gave us the Torah and thus join a greater universe of beings, doing what I guess we will find out when the time comes. Of course, that time has not yet come, but judging from the rapid changes in humanity, in technology, and developing current events and science, our eventual close encounter does draw closer. The Torah was designed to have multiple levels of meaning and application for each generation of humanity. But for each level of human psychological development, thus anyone can look into the Torah and find meaning and relevance in it. However, that which the individual sees is but one of the infinite facets that there is to be seen. How many facets of the Torah are there? There are an infinite amount. At a minimum, there is 7.5 billion facets to the Torah. But that's not a complete number. That's the arrogance of the human being who says, who teaches that the universe is composed of 7.5 billion human beings and the animals and things that it, that the, have been created or have been grown for them to be used as tools. But there can't be other people that are higher, other places on other planets, in other sun systems, solar systems. This is arrogance. We will come to understand this arrogance. The guardians of the Torah have always maintained that there are infinite levels of understanding the Torah, and as many ways of understanding each individual level. Historical scholarship has shown that the library of Torah-based material is overwhelming. As humanity evolves, greater and deeper levels of Torah information are being discovered and exposed. As our knowledge of science and technology develops, and we apply many of its lessons to Torah research, indeed, Torah begins to unveil itself as being the multidimensional extraterrestrial resource that it is. Replete with strata of until now unknown knowledge. There are levels that have not been revealed of the Torah. We don't even know how to define them. And if you can't define something, you can't reveal it. The givers of Torah placed the givers of Torah placed all this within it, with more yet to come. And all that is needed for this discovery is for humanity to evolve to the point to learn how to look and what to look for. This is an aside from the book, but it's part of the teachings of Torah. You have some aspect of Torah that out of the 7.5 billion people, only you can reveal. Only you can explain it. Only you can make connection to it. That's your responsibility. There is one thing at a minimum that you need to reveal about the Torah. And that requires the study of Kabbalah. And that is why every human being will eventually, sometime in the next 36,000 years, learn all that is needed for the discovery that you need to discover and that humanity needs to discover is for you and humanity to evolve to the point to learn how to look and to learn what to look for. These deeper levels of knowledge concealed within Torah are not meant to be publicly taught until such time when humanity as a whole has evolved psychologically to a point where such knowledge can be integrated successfully and used constructively. It would be irresponsible to place dangerous tools into the hands of unprepared children. Yet while we wait for humanity as a whole to evolve, entitled individuals who have matured to a proper level may be granted individual access to the knowledge for their own personal betterment and improvement. This teaching by Rabbi Bar Tzedak is the teaching that took place in the development of the Kabbalah from the years approximately 800 to the year 1400 in the land we call Spain. That's where Kabbalah developed. That's where it was developed by small groups of people. But there was a revelation by these people that in the end of the 1400s, in 1492, as an example, they were supposed to teach what they had developed to others. But their answer was, just like Rabbi Bar Tzedak's answer here, is you're not ready. The effect of that was 500 years of additional pain and suffering. And the effect of that culminated in the Shoah. One of the explanations for the Shoah, for the Holocaust, is that these people, these souls in Spain in 1400, 1300, 1200, and so forth, these souls did not teach to others what they had developed. And the effect of that is they reincarnated into the Jews, the children of Israel of that generation, the generation of the Shoah. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not true. These are things you need to ponder for yourself and either accept as truth or not accept as truth. If you don't accept it as truth, it does not mean it's a lie. If you accept it as truth, it doesn't mean there's other ways to understand and learn. Continuing, this is why Torah was written in code form, to provide access and opportunity to those who have proven themselves mature and responsible, and at the same time to prevent access to those not yet mature and responsible. The decision between who is who, as always, is not in human hands. Torah appears to us in its most external form as a collection of stories and ritual observances. Throughout the centuries, Torah masters have admonished us not to be deceived into believing that the surface is all that there is. Unfortunately, their warnings have often been ignored. For centuries, there have been arguments, even wars, over the correct meaning of the surface of the Torah, how certain stories are to be understood, and how specific ritual observances are to be observed, forgetting frequently that at the time of the Torah's revelation to Moses on Mount Sinai, there were 12 groups of people, each one perceiving that revelation differently, each one with its own path of prayer, each one with its own unique understanding of the various rituals. We still have those 12 groups of people. And the secret is, they're not 12, they're 13. But continuing, On the surface of matters, one may view the Torah as being the source of much destruction and devastation that has come to humanity. As bad as things have been, with entire nations warring over their interpretations and their application of Torah, human history would have been significantly worse had the Torah not been there at all. Wars would still have been fought, because the wars were not fought over the Torah. The wars were fought over the desire to receive for oneself alone. The depths of Torah knowledge can only be accessed by a specific code key. This key will never be stumbled upon haphazardly. The givers of Torah protected well their treasures. Instead, they entrusted the keys for unlocking the deeper knowledge in the form of the code. The code itself is intensely difficult and at the same time intensely simple. This contradiction is something no childish mind will ever be able to balance and integrate, whereas the mature adult mind, with some effort and training, is able to master. While the human mind enjoys the challenge of unraveling the complex part of the code, it cannot succeed in doing so without the simplistic part the human mind is baffled by, simplicity, and finds itself often unable to grasp it and embrace it. Yet without simplicity, complexity will also never be grasped and embraced. One needs to draw close to the one in order to embrace the other. Only the psychologically mature will be able to learn and thus do this. The code for unlocking the deeper levels of Torah is given to those individuals who have shown themselves sufficiently mature and responsible to receive it. The keys to the code are a gift. They cannot be earned or acquired by any means. One receives them individually from a specific individual who has already received them, or one does not receive them at all. This is a one-to-one transmission. This is the way the system was established in the beginning. It will maintain itself this way until the dawning of a new era for all humanity, when collectively we will evolve beyond our present status. We're going to stop here. We're almost out of time, and I do want to leave time for questions. We will pick it up this next week at the same time on Monday in our 11 o'clock class. I hope you'll find this interesting. I hope you'll find this worthwhile continuing to learn at this book. Does anyone have any questions? We have three more. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say thank you. I presently don't. I enjoy Barzadok anyway. So thank you.
You're welcome. There are three more classes today. One will be at 1 p.m. West Coast time, and it is really a study of the preparation for Pesach, and specifically the Parah Adumah, the red heifer, and what does that truly entail at the level of the secret Our deep Zohar is at 4:30, and at 7 p.m. we will have the class on the writings of the Ari for the Parasha of Ki Tisa. I wish you all Shalom Gadol, a Shavua Tov. Much happiness and serenity and completeness in your life. Shalom to all.
Shalom. Thank you.
Thank you.
It really sounds like it's going to be a great class. Thank you.
I agree. Thank you. Shalom.
Mm-hmm.